Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Eric.
How are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
Doing well, thank you. Another great day for It's the Real.
Yes, every day is a great day when we are podcasting because that is what we say.
12 days of podcasts. This is 4 days in, I think.
I don't know.
Let's go over it. Yeah. We had the year in review.
Yeah.
We had CJ Fly.
Yep.
We had Officially Ice.
Yep.
And today we have
Kim Osorio, the former
editor-in-chief of The Source. She does a lot of television production and writing right now. We'll get into her whole story, but we have to mention right now that February 23rd, 2017, we, It's The Real, are headlining SOBs here in New York City. It's called
Your Girls Tour. It is not a world tour. It is Your Girls Tour, and it is one date.
And guess what?
Yes.
Tickets are on sale right now. Go to itsthereal.com. Go get those tickets for you, your friends, your family, strangers. Give them away.
You want to know what? You're not just getting tickets for them. You're getting tickets for us.
That's right. The best present you can give us this holiday season is to buy tickets to our headlining show, Your Girls Tour, at SOB's February 23rd, 2017. We're doing new music. We're doing old music. We're bringing people up from the crowd. We're bringing in special guests. It's a night you do not want to miss. Where should they go, Jeff?
You should go to SOBs on February 23rd, 2017, but you can also go to itsthereal.com.
Yeah,
you can buy all of your tickets there. You can buy tickets on SOBs.com as well.
Tickets are on sale right now.
Right now.
It's pretty amazing. We went to Lenny S. And Yan Yan and Bree Bree and Loki's holiday party. And who dropped by?
Chance the Rapper.
Who else dropped by?
Yo Gotti.
And who else dropped by?
Meek Mill.
Meek Mill. And did we ask Meek's publicist, Jason, whether we should mention what the name of this tour was?
We did, but then he said, don't you guys actually want to live? And we said, well, that seems like a good idea, too.
Kim Osorio's on the podcast today. It's a really good one. Did you realize, Jeff, that she went to... You know what? Let's just get into it. When do you want to start this?
I want to get into this podcast as soon as people comment on iTunes,
oh,
get our ratings up, because people are doing that, and our rating is going up,
It's been a really nice thing to refresh iTunes and see all these new reviews. So thank you, everyone who's been doing that. When should we get into this podcast?
As soon as people give us 5 stars on the reviews. Like, I think that that's a point I want to make.
So now?
If you did it, then yes. But if not, then we'll get into the podcast in a second.
Like now?
Right now.
Yo, what up? It's Eric, a.k.a. Static Electricity, a.k.a. Caught a Charge.
Yo, what up? It's Jeff, a.k.a. Tattoo Teardrops, a.k.a. Forever Emo.
Yo, what up? It's Kim Osorio, a.k.a. Kim O, a.k.a. Kim O.
Yeah, this waste time, but it's the real.
Kim, how are you?
Kim, thanks for coming up to the Upper West Side.
Thanks. I'll always come to the Upper West Side. You've never invited me here before.
Well,
come back.
First of all, we've done karaoke together.
We have.
We did.
For Miss Info's birthday.
Was it really bad?
It was amazing.
It was, well, but karaoke is supposed to be bad.
You don't have it on video, right? No, I'm like the karaoke champion in the Korean community where I live.
Oh, is that right?
It's
known.
I feel like you're putting like shots out there. Next time, don't make me bring my friends up here to say that I am the champion.
What is your song of choice?
I like Cyndi Lauper, Girls Just Want to Have Fun.
Okay. Yeah. Classic.
Same. We could battle it out.
You like that one too?
Yeah.
No, ours...
I think it's true. I think Girls Do Just Want to Have Fun.
Nice and Slow by Usher is a great one.
That's yours?
It's a really good
really
one.
That's a good
one. Tony Braxton's
Unbreak My Heart. Yeah.
Yeah, gotta do that. Yeah.
Do you guys do them together? Or?
Yeah, sometimes, yeah.
Okay. It's entertaining.
Yeah. When are we going?
What are you doing right now?
I want to go for real.
So, yeah, let's do it. But you took the 2 train up here.
I took the... Oh, my God.
What
did the
2 train mean to you?
All right, so I don't get on the train anymore. I'm just going to put it out there. Call it whatever you want. Bougie. I don't care. But it's because... I'm scarred. Like, I grew up taking the 6 train every day. You know what I'm saying?
Like J-Lo.
Like J-Lo.
On the 6, yeah.
You know we went to the same elementary school.
No, I didn't know
that. Yeah, she doesn't know who I am. It's fine. It's fine.
Wait, you don't think she knows who you are?
She definitely doesn't know who I am. It's not that I don't think. I know she doesn't know who I am.
There's 2 things Kim knows. One is that she's the queen of karaoke.
Yes.
And 2 is that J-Lo has no idea who she
just
is.
Just in my community. Just in Fort Lee, New Jersey. Not here. Oh, my God. I just told everybody where I live.
I know.
J-Lo does not know who I am. And I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that. Yeah, we went to the same elementary school. It's hard. I was a pretty popular kid. Mm-hmm. But then, of course, it's like somebody always has to steal my shine. Like, I was popular, and then it's like J-Lo had to go to my elementary school.
Damn. So,
fucking J-Lo.
I know. Yeah. Yeah. Think of what could have been.
I know. She was 4 years older than me, so now you know how old she is.
What does the 2 train mean to you?
So the 2 was just another line, like the 6. My cousin lived up, you know, that way. And it first of all, it's the longest train ride, or at least back in the day.
Yeah.
It was the longest train ride you could ever take if you were going to the 2, on the 2 and wherever I was going.
Yeah,
because that's high up.
So
it's so far. It's
where are you? You're from the Bronx.
I'm from Castle Hill.
Castle Hill. Man.
Yeah.
So what was it like growing up in Castle Hill?
Awesome.
Okay.
It was good. I did a lot of things in my day, you know, and I came up and I learned a lot. And I had a crew. My mother says I was in a gang. That is not true.
Not true.
Well, what colors were you wearing?
But we used to call ourselves TMG, Tough May Girls.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
From Castle Hill.
How many girls
were in TMG? You know us? Yeah. No. How many? You're like, no, but J-Lo I know does.
How many girls were in TMG?
TMG was like, oh my God, there's a book I can write one day.
Yeah.
TMG was like... maybe 10 of us.
Whoa.
Yeah.
What was your nickname?
I don't think I had one. I was just Kim.
I mean, the girl with the knife.
Did you have matching?
I did Special K when I was really young, mm-hmm. just because of the movie Breakin', remember?
Yeah, did you dance?
Yeah, I used to break.
What? Uh-huh. Did you guys have matching jackets?
No, but we stole jackets once from Macy's.
Yo, really? TMG were mean girls.
I shouldn't say that, right?
No, it's stealing jackets.
Macy's
statute of limitations.
Yeah, I'm never, ever going to be
Macy's. How did that go down?
Anymore.
Like, so, was somebody, like, on the lookout and somebody else was, like, you know...
stealing the jackets?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then you jumped on the train, like...
Yeah, Kim, how do you steal a jacket?
This is really romantic, the whole, like, idea of all of this.
Listen, I'm going to give it to you.
Please.
You put it on, and then you walk out.
That's it.
That's it. See, but I don't know if you could do that nowadays.
People
they have
overthink.
A little,
yeah, they have like the strips and stuff. Yeah, like,
that's the issue.
People. No, that's why you gotta
actually put 2 on
mm-hmm.
and walked out that day.
Was that because one of your friends was a pussy?
Well, here's the thing. I was the bigger pussy because after we walked out and I was like, with your jacket, she was like, you wearing it. Give it to me. And I had to give her one of the jackets I
stole. Put in the work and she
and
gets
she
the shine.
Took the damn jacket. Yeah. Damn. Tammy.
Tammy?
Yeah.
Does Tammy listen?
Maybe. I'll make sure she does from now on.
How many of TMG are you still close with?
2.
2? Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah. I love them, though.
Well, shout out to those 2.
Yeah.
How often do you make it back to Castle Hill?
Does Facebook count?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, so then all of them.
Oh, yeah.
We're
but,
all close.
But Facebook friends aren't real friends, though.
I know. You know? That's why I asked. Yeah. So I, all of them.
Well, how many do you get in political arguments with?
None of them.
How many do you wish them, like, happy birthday?
One.
2. One out of the 2.
Because I always forget the other one's birthday. Always.
No, but that's what Facebook is. It's a calendar. It tells you.
Facebook is amazing for that. But I can't wish everyone a happy birthday. So I just want to tell every one of my Facebook friends right now here.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
So how often do you make it back to Castle Hill?
Never.
Never?
Never.
None of your family lives up there anymore?
Nope.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. It's you know, I'm from the Bronx, but a lot of my family has moved out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when you grow up a certain way, you move out and you feel good about it. And if there's no family, like there's no really, I go back to speak. Let me do my due diligence right
yes.
now. Mm-hmm. I go back when I'm invited to speak at schools, to go back into my community all the time. But you're not going to see me hanging at the bodega.
Right.
Like, no.
And but how good was the bodega when you were there?
Do they have those in the city nowadays? Like, do they still
I mean,
have
they're mostly priced less out. Less, yeah, yeah. Now we have, like, Apple stores.
Last year, I went to a French Montana video shoot for
Lucky?
Something.
Yeah, which one?
Lucky. I love French Montana. It's so funny because my car, I had to drive my car in the garage. It's, like, in the video. I'm like, why is my car in the video? So I went, and there was, it was in Washington Heights. And there was mm-hmm. a bodega.
Yeah.
And I went in, and they had honey buns.
Oh.
So you
and
were good.
I hadn't
yeah.
seen honey buns since my childhood. So it's a little, I'm dealing with it in like my therapy sessions.
You're right, sure.
Yeah,
sure. Your like therapist is not in Castle Hill.
No, no. But you know, I'm dealing with like how my childhood and how I was brought up affects who I am as a person and how I deal with people. I'm at that grown up stage.
Wow.
Yeah.
So how did wearing Timberlands and, you know, drinking Nutcrackers shape you as a.
I think it definitely provided or shaped my career. Mm-hmm. Because if I wasn't so into it, then I wouldn't be in the business, you know? And that can be looked at as a plus and, you know, a positive and a negative.
Yeah.
Because I am getting older and it is hard as... I can curse, right?
Yeah, of course.
Oh, hard as fuck, there you know, go. To get a check these days. So nowadays, it's like you max out at a certain age. And hip-hop is like, well, what you doing?
Right.
You know, if you're home, if you having kids or, you know, everybody's like, where you been at? I'm like, I've been home. Like, I'm good.
Right.
But, yeah. You know, the perception is that if you're not posting every 5 minutes on social media and you're not doing all of that and telling everybody what you're doing, like, oh, my God, I got to check, I got to check, got to check, got to check. That's all everybody does.
Yeah, then you fell
it's
off.
Like, quit, I got to check, got to check. It's
that's
like,
so
you
real.
Think you're, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's odd. Because I'm not used to telling people when I'm used to getting a check and being like, I don't want nobody to ask me for my check.
Right.
You know?
But also, like,
I'm a little Jewish.
But also, do you, we're a lot Jewish. But also, do you want to be that person who's just like, oh, yeah, like, I'm out here and here's what I'm doing, right? Like,
I don't want people, I've never been the type that wants people to know what I'm doing.
Right.
Because, and I'm dealing with that in therapy.
Growing up in Castle Hill, how big was your family there?
I grew up with my older sister.
Mm-hmm.
I have a younger sister, but she's from my mother's second marriage. Mm-hmm. So, you know, growing up in Castle Hill, it was us. We were a small family, but my mom had 14 brothers and sisters. So I have a lot of cousins.
Yeah.
My father he was one of five.
Wow.
Right. So I have a big family. And actually, I'm on this big DNA thing right now. I just did my DNA. When I'm telling you I'm
Ancestry.
A little Jewish, I'm a little Jewish. Yeah. I'm a little Jewish. I'm 1% Jewish.
You
want to see?
Oh, you really are?
Yes, I'm Jewish.
Congratulations, yeah. One of us.
So 1%. So I did this Ancestry thing, and it's connecting me to some cousins. He's taking pictures. I have a donut.
Is that weird?
It's like, very weird.
Meeting?
It's weird. I have a doppelganger. It's weird. Like, we're third cousins, and she looks like me, and our grandmothers look alike, and we never knew each other, and we met this weekend.
This happened this weekend?
Yes.
This happened to our mom and our aunt, like, did a little bit of... Because someone, a third cousin, something,
yeah.
like, reached
yeah.
out and was like, hey, can we all get together? And it was just like, how do we not know you even existed? And then you look at the pictures, and it's like, this is so strange.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
And I didn't know she existed.
Where does she live?
She lives in the Bronx. She grew up in the Bronx.
But what train line?
The two.
Oh, see?
See?
Yeah, you would have run into each other if you're on the six. Yeah.
Is that why you took the two train today?
No,
this is something you have to talk about therapy.
Express, yeah, right? Like, it was an express train, and I was like, I got to get on it because I got to get there. And I got on, and I'm okay. Like, nothing happened.
Yep.
You got to understand, I came up in the day where, like, the subway was, like, this third rail. I used to walk in the subways from one station to the next. Like, remember
what?
That? Yeah.
No, I don't remember that.
Wait,
no, because I grew up, like, I say the 90s really molded who I am as a person, but I grew up in the 80s. Like,
right, right.
That was my elementary years in the 80s.
But why would you walk from one station to another station underground instead of... Were you just...
The train used to take mad long, okay?
You were looking for danger.
Yeah, we were, you know, we were...
Rats.
Rebels.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, there were rats. It's a crazy thing. And, like, I'd be on the trains. It'd be stuck for hours. I'd be on the trains. Things would happen. People would get robbed, like, all of this stuff. So for me to get on a train today when I don't have to, it's a big, you know, it's a big statement.
So you would stand in between the two trains that would go in opposite directions?
No.
Okay.
As they were coming?
Yeah. Like,
No, I'd be dead.
I know.
No. No, you would walk in the train when the train wasn't coming. Like, so certain stations used to, God, this was so long ago. You could see, you know what I'm saying? Like, if the train was coming, and you could see the other station.
Oh.
It was close like that. So you just jump down, and then you walk. Before the train comes, and then...
Yeah, by the way, you're not that Jewish. Because if you were real Jewish, then you would never, never do that. No.
So you guys don't remember, like, the third rail? Like,
No, I remember it.
But that,
as in, like, don't touch it.
The third rail.
But here, we don't not only touch the third rail, we don't
get down
leave.
There.
No, not at all.
I would never do it nowadays. Now
and
that
you
I've
would
discovered
never let your
my
kids
1%
do that?
Jew?
No.
Absolutely not.
Never.
Absolutely not, but I did it. I remember walking in the train.
Where?
And sometimes the tracks were not active. You know what I mean? So there would be tracks there that you knew the trains weren't running on, so you knew you could walk. You know, I don't remember fully, but I just remember being down there, being scared as fuck, and then, you know, going from one station to the next.
Where did your bubble, like, end? How far would you go beyond the Bronx? Would you ride out to Coney Island or to, like...
On the train?
Yeah.
Oh, I would go anywhere on the train back then.
Really?
Yeah. I used to have boyfriends in different parts. I had so many boyfriends in Queens. I don't know what that was about.
Different boroughs.
Yeah, like, I was Brooklyn Bronx. I know. That's how I can tell like a personality when I meet people and I deal with them in business. I'm like, you're from Brooklyn.
What makes person from Brooklyn?
Brooklyn's very grimy. Like very grimy, very that's bad. We're gonna be like, yeah. She's talking about Brooklyn. No, Brooklyn,
you're territorial.
Yeah, Brooklyn. But you know, Brooklyn guys are very flashy too. Like, you know, not in the Harlem way. You've heard Dame tell the stories between Brooklyn. I was from Harlem. Jay was from Brooklyn. This is how we looked. This is the sneakers we had, and we looked at each other's sneakers. And remember that story?
Yeah,
we've
of course.
Read that before. Yeah. Like that's the mentality of the era that I came up in.
We had Clark Kent come up here, right?
Yeah.
And
so
Clark
he'd tell you
and
the
Clark
story.
Was like, when I met Dame, he's like, he better have respect to my fresh. Like,
yeah.
You know, yeah.
It's all about their like white Air Force Ones. Or
yeah.
Some shit.
Yeah.
The
yeah.
whole story, like the whole Rockefeller thing, was built on like their sneakers.
And what was your style?
Back then, I was
Subway chic.
Whatever really
you could sell from
style that much,
whatever
you know?
Could sell from or steal from Macy's.
Macy's. Oh God, I didn't say that.
No, I'm
right.
Hypothetically,
do that.
Yeah,
that's more of a Brooklyn thing.
Yeah.
So, what was your high school experience like?
I went to Cardinal Spellman.
Okay,
in the Bronx.
So private school. No,
is that what you call private? Catholic.
Is it Catholic
yeah,
school?
I guess,
so,
yeah.
But
yeah.
Like uniforms.
Uniforms.
Strict,
yeah.
Like teachers.
Nuns. Yeah. But it was fun. We had a great high school experience.
Yeah.
You know? It wasn't as strict, you know.
Did you go to dances?
All the time.
What was your?
I used to dance like with a circle around me.
Yeah.
Yes.
You were that girl.
Yes.
You ran shit.
It's embarrassing. Yes. I used to like Running Man, and I had a mean Running Man, not the one that was on social media recently, like the real one.
Yo, when Special K got on that
like,
dance floor,
I was a Special K by then. I had ditched that name. That was my breakdance name. Like I did like a show where like a breakdancing with my fifth grade class. Like yeah, I used to dance. I used to dance for real though. That's why.
And J-Lo still didn't know you.
No, she stole my swag.
No, but what was that like, by the way, when she got on television, though?
I guess that was like the rest of us were like, oh, I guess not.
Oh.
No, by then, I think I was like, I'm not going to dance for, you know, I don't know what was going on in Castle Hill back then. Like, everyone was just like
But did you watch In Living Color?
Absolutely.
And were you like, wow, that
yes,
really?
Yes, everyone was like, you know what? When she did Money Train, everyone in the neighborhood was like, oh my God, did you see Jennifer on Money Train? And it was like, you know, a big deal
because
she had made it. And that was like, she was from our neighborhood. And I used to work at Kips Bay. She used to dance out of Kips Bay, which is that, it's like a community center. And her picture was like on the wall, like Jennifer Lopez from In Living Color. Why are
crazy.
We talking about J-Lo?
Why
my
not?
Time.
We just,
why not? Wait,
now we can include her in the tweet that we put out.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
She's definitely going
to
know who you are.
Same,
that's right. Yeah,
how
yeah.
I went to the same school as
J-Lo and Special K.
Yeah.
I know,
it's like our mom went to high school with Goldie Hawn.
Her mom was the gym teacher.
Really?
How was she? Was she good?
She was all right.
Wow. Wow.
You know what I remember? I mean, she was fine. She was just a little mean.
Jennifer or her mom?
Her mom.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Her mom was like the gym teacher.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
All the teachers were mean back then in Catholic school,
of course,
right? Like,
yeah.
They're always telling you what to do and yelling at you. So I'll hold it against
telling
her.
You not to get, you know, down the subway, all that
yeah,
stuff.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Like, all that stuff.
Was writing or journalism a part of your high school career?
No.
Nothing?
No.
What was the plan?
Yeah, what did you want to do?
Well, you mean when I wasn't dancing?
Yeah.
I don't know. Okay, so what did I do? I went to high school. Well, I come from a family where my mom and my father, like they didn't really go to college. Like my mom maybe tried college for a semester. So going to college was the success. Going and graduating to college was the success. And becoming a lawyer or a doctor was
oh so you are Jewish
very
yeah.
Jewish
yeah. Yeah so I you know I went to law school and I thought I was gonna be a lawyer and
but first you went to college and where'd you go undergrad
Fordham
University so staying local
yeah.
Staying Catholic or no
yeah
it's
well that's Jesuit
Jesuit yeah. Right all right how was that experience oh.
I didn't really connect, okay. I think, with the Fordham community, you mm-hmm. know, by that time I was getting my foot in the door in the industry. So I started to really, I was going to school, but I really was, you know,
well, what were you listening
to that?
In the 90s. What had you been listening to at that point?
Music wise?
Yeah.
I was always hip hop.
Right. But like
except when I did the freestyle thing back in like, remember freestyle?
Of course.
Yeah.
People
but you,
don't know what
but you're
that
not
is.
Latina.
I am half Puerto Rican.
Oh, true.
I'm half Puerto Rican.
Right.
Which apparently is 1% Jewish in
right.
my DNA.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, my mom is half black, half Chinese. Mm-hmm. So I'm all mixed up. That's part of why I did my DNA. I wanted to see like where my background was, because I've never identified racially with mm-hmm. any, even though a lot of my friends were Puerto Rican and I look Puerto Rican. They were like, oh, you're Puerto Rican. My daughter asked me the other day, she said, Mom, what language am I? Am I like Puerto Rican? I'm like, I don't know.
We come from the Bronx.
Yeah. I told her, her father's like, you're black. I'm like, yeah, but she's got some mix in her. She wants to know because she's very light and her friends don't know by looking at her that she's black. They don't, they always, you know, people are funny. They're always like, oh, what are you? What are you?
Right.
I'm like, I don't know. What am I?
Right.
I'm American.
Right.
Right.
You know, I've always had a problem racially, I think.
So what does your daughter want to claim?
She loves being black, you know, Beyonce, right? Look, I won't say politically correct here. You know, but she, for her, she just doesn't know.
Yeah.
Because she goes to school with, and kids are young and there is no, you know, I mean, yeah, some people raise their kids away that they have issues. But, you know, for kids who are growing up and being raised by parents who are very conscious racially and they want everyone to treat each other the same, she's luckily in that community. So they're just all kids. You know, they don't look at like you're black. But I think now as she gets older, that's why it's an issue. Because like, she's nine. Asking me this way, like, you're 9 years. You didn't know what you were for 9 years. I guess I never told her because that's not how I came up. I didn't grow up like, you're Puerto Rican, make sure. Or you're this or you're that. I just grew up.
Right.
And I was good.
Right. Yeah. There's a value set. And that's what.
Yeah, and Kino, he grew up very differently, my husband, because he grew up in Detroit, and he's very conscious of who he is, and he is very big on teaching the kids who they are. So for that, they should hear their father saying you're black, but he's so light-skinned, too. They're probably like, you ain't black, daddy. Like, what you talking about, daddy? Are you Puerto Rican? What are you? They talk to him in Spanish, like when he goes to the corner store sometimes. No.
So your Fordham experience, you didn't really connect a lot.
Nah.
And you said you're getting into the industry at that point.
Oh yeah.
What does that mean?
Ugh, that was tough. That was I had this job that I got like in the middle of college, and it was at Muse. It was a music software company. It was a very big part of shaping me professionally that I didn't realize back then. Back then, I just wanted to work at the Source or XXL,
right?
When XXL was launched. I didn't care about this Muse job. I was like, I hate this job. 9 to 5. Hello. I was making good money. It was 9 to 5. Sometimes it was 12 to 8. Like, I had a very flexible shift. It was a great job.
But what was it?
We were a music software company that used to enter all of the data into these kiosks that went in the record stores. So if you went into Tower Records, you would go to the kiosk. And this was before all of this digital shit. And you would type in, like, who did that song? Busta Move. And all of the information would come up. So the reason why it was such a big part of my career is because I was the only hip-hop person there. So all the hip hop would come and they'd be like, oh, Kim, you want this stuff, right? And everybody would take their favorite genre and I would take all the hip hop. So any album that came out between 94 and 99, I took the album and I entered every bit of information from the album into the system. So it became like, you know, this encyclopedia in my head. So like, I know stupid shit that nobody cares about, like where Mobb Deep's album was recorded or shit like that.
Where was Mobb Deep's album recorded?
I don't know. Chung King, maybe?
Yeah, man, probably.
I'm thinking of the Infamous.
Probably,
it was
probably
Chung King.
Yeah.
Yeah, so like all of these facts that, you know, who produced this and I had. So when I started to write, a lot of these facts I started to apply. I became very knowledgeable because not only did I have sort of the experience of, or just the knowledge of listening to music, because I loved music and the way that I consumed it, I just listened and listened and listened. Like I came, when the Notorious B.I.G.'s album came in, I remember that day and I told all the white kids that I work with, I was like, this is shit. Y'all don't know. They're like, ah, it's not that good. We love this Wu-Tang shit. I was like, no, listen, this guy, I'm like, he's incredible. And I put some people on and they were like, wow, that guy's really good. Like, they had no clue, but I used to put them up on hip hop stuff because they just didn't, you know, come. They didn't know hip hop.
Yeah.
But I just was getting all that information and putting into the system. And I think that those facts and all of that data entry was licensed years later after I left to a lot of online music stores. So occasionally, and I've seen this before, I'll see some of my writing because I started to do annotations on the album. So we would have to do descriptions that were positive So this is also something that shaped how I write reviews, because we could not say anything negative because this was, we're selling the records in the stores.
Yeah.
So Mobb Deep, for example, I taped the Infamous album and I would write all of the stuff that was great about the album in this 100-word annotation about the record that would go into the system that was eventually licensed to these companies.
Yes, yeah, so now it's like on Amazon.com.
Exactly. Right. I believe Amazon.com is where they sold some of the information.
Yeah, because they do like, what is it, like allreviews.com or something like that? And so then that like gets processed and
so
off to Amazon.
So some of that is my writing.
That might
writing.
Be your most read stuff. How crazy is that?
And nobody knows I couldn't put a byline on it.
I'm gonna look up like a Wu-Tang album. And it's gonna be not as good as Biggie's, but you know, it's all right.
Like something released between 94 and 99.
Yeah,
that I would have annotated, and I had to annotate everything
you claim
that I had.
All of that. You should go on all the Amazon pages and be like, I wrote this.
Yeah,
5 stars.
Yeah.
You know what's funny? Some of them I remember. I'm probably like 95% I don't remember. You know, I would.
Well, yeah, because it's just
it
a blur of positive.
Positive K.
Like, what did I write about Skilo?
Right.
Like, I don't remember.
I would be interested in that.
More than just one hit.
Yeah. Yeah. So, what did you know about The Source or XXL back then? Like, Vibe?
I was a fan. I was reading the magazines. They would come through the office when I was at Muse because we used them. We would excerpt the reviews from The Source. This album got 5 mics. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
This album, The Source gives this album 3.5 mics. So I became more knowledgeable being at that job. That's why I say it helped to shape.
Where was Muse located, by the way?
First, we were in Williamsburg, Brooklyn.
Whoa.
Oh, yes. Hip. Very hip.
Before it.
Yeah. We were, and it was just this warehouse.
That's grimy.
It was an incredible job. Like, now looking back, I hated it, though, because I used to take the J and the Z train. What is this?
Deep, yeah.
Yeah. But then it moved to Hudson Street. And they were located right across the street from, like,
High 97.
Yeah,
for many years before I left. And everyone was like, you're going to get a job at, like, one of these magazines. And then when I moved up, I thought that was such a big accomplishment. Like, I got a job at XXL.
And how did you do that?
How did I get a job at XXL?
Yeah.
Elliot. Elliot gave me my first job.
Did he find you or did you apply?
I knew Elliot because Elliot...
You could hear his laugh.
Miles away.
It was like a beacon.
Yeah, right? I did many internships while I was at Muse, and even like I worked at BMG Distribution, and then I did an internship for, I did Profile Records internship. I did an internship for a company, I hate to give them anything, but it was called Kick-Ass Records.
Kick-Ass Records.
Don't blow them up.
No.
Because when my lawsuit came, this guy came and wanted to testify against me because he's a hater. And it was wild.
Some executive from the label?
Not even an executive, like an owner. The old owner showed up. I'm like, I haven't seen this guy in 10 years. What the hell?
He was there to kick ass.
He was like, I'm not going to go down. And he just came out of nowhere. But I worked there. And very few people in the industry know that. Like, Elliot is one.
Mm-hmm.
Iron is another. My friend DJ Iron out of DC. Like, I would call them trying to promote these records. So I was doing radio / press prom. And Elliot was someone I would call very early on. He would take my call. He'd be like, Kim from Kick-Ass Records. You know, what do you got? And I was like, I got this record by this group. And, you know, Elliot listen and say if he liked it or not or if he was going to review it. So that's how I met Elliot.
How was your success rate in getting records?
I think I got a couple spins, but it was hard back then. Like, you know.
We had Jeff Sledge on, and we were talking about, like, what it must have been like to have a million different record labels around.
It was hard.
Because you're competing with everybody. It's not just,
you're competing with Payola. Like, remember back then, people were like,
I mean, that's what our thing is now.
Yeah.
We ran around the city giving out Payola to everybody from, like, Lior Cohen to...
Yeah.
Just to get our record
to
played.
Power 105 to everybody.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
So,
we labeled it as such so that people wouldn't get confused. This is Payola.
Correct.
Yeah.
Hilarious. So when... Elliot comes calling.
Well, it's not that he came calling. I think when Elliot was at The Source, I started writing for him. And I was like, always like, Elliot, give me a job. So I was persistent back then. Like, I was like, I'm better than all these people.
Did they pay by the word?
Yes. It was $1 a word.
Okay.
Yeah, or 50 cents a word. From some of them were 50 cents a word, some were $1 a word.
And how was it getting your money? Like, did they.
From The Source?
Yeah.
Back then, there was no. major issue getting paid. Yeah, like, remember, these are 300-page magazines back then.
Right, they were
raking in the advertising dough.
So they had no problem getting their money out.
No,
to those
if
who
you
deserved
did your
it.
Paper, yeah. usually back then, if you weren't getting paid on time, it's because an editor probably wasn't putting in your contract on time. But they wouldn't say that. They're going to blame, you know, probably Dave and Ray and all the drama. It wasn't until, you know, when I became editor-in-chief, maybe a couple of years after, where you started to see the effects of the whole Eminem drama and the advertising, that the Source started struggling. It wasn't until then. Back then, the Source was fine cutting checks. It's just a matter of who they were going to cut checks to.
So the first thing you do is reviews.
Yep.
And
my
I was going to ask if you remember.
Peter Guns.
Wow.
For the Source.
Oh, from your old, you know, neighborhood.
Yep. I remember I wrote the review. I did a mic check, which was a Q&A on Lord's Week and Peter Guns. Deja Vu was big for us.
Yeah.
Ross was coming back. We were like, yeah. Riggs, I think it was Riggs. You guys know Riggs, right?
Of course, yeah.
Riggs was like, who is this girl? How did she ask? There was a question that I asked Peter Guns based on a line that he said on the album. And the line was something like, you know, it was basically one of those subliminals like either I killed somebody or I will kill somebody.
Yeah.
I don't remember what it was.
Yeah.
But, you know, the question was like, so you said this in this line. What did you mean? You know, and it was like a really direct, and he gave his answer and danced around it or however he did it. It was fine. But I remember Riggs, I think it was either Riggs or Carlito saying like, who is she? Because I asked really good questions.
Yeah.
And that's how I sort of got in with C and with Riggs, and they started to assign me, and Smokey, they started to assign me articles. So then when Elliot left to XXL, he hired me to be the lifestyle editor. But lifestyle wasn't really my thing. I just really wanted to get
to
a magazine.
Yeah.
And then a month later, Carlito got the job at The Source, and he was like, I have a position for you in the music department. It was a step down, but it was in the music department.
Which is what you wanted.
Elliot upset to lose you?
Yes.
How did he make that known?
He offered me $10,000 more dollars to stay than I was getting at The Source. And I was stupid back then. I was like, I want to go to The Source, you know? And I went to The Source as opposed to he offered me $10,000 more.
What was it like when Elliot, did he announce he was leaving or?
Back then?
Yes.
From The Source?
Yeah.
I think it was a big deal. I don't know. With The Source, it was always, and I don't remember his particular story, but with The Source, it was always because you didn't get what you thought you were supposed to get. And that's why you were leaving. And isn't it funny? Because when you get into the real world and you work and you have a job, you don't always get promoted.
Right.
You don't always get things. But it's politics. But at The Source, it was so dear to everyone's heart. Right, this magazine, this institution of hip-hop journalism.
Yeah.
You felt like you didn't get what you deserved, and you deserved that spot. And a lot of people were always coming in and out because they felt like either they were passed over for a promotion. You know, when I got the job, people left because it was like that was, you know, they believed that they should have that job. It always felt like this is a democracy. Like we all should. No, really, it's the boss's decision in any company that you work for.
Yeah.
You know, and that was a big thing with The Source. Like whenever the bosses would come down and make a decision, like it was like, no, this is The Source. We can't say that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
In hindsight, looking at how people just move in today's world, I'm like, wow, isn't that interesting that The Source got so much flack? And I'm part of it. Like I was pissed too. I'm like, they should not get 4.5 mics. How did but that's how we felt. We were so tied to the content and what we were doing. It was so personal to us that we couldn't, you know, agree to, we couldn't stand behind it if a decision was made that we were against. But it's just the corporate world.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, like you talk about in your book, I think, like, which I just like rewrite. I don't like have it like on memory at all times. But you talk about how Nas had gotten like a second 5-star review, a 5-mic review.
Yeah.
Had gotten 5 mics, and it's because Benzino's like band or like production team.
I didn't say because.
No. Not because
but
you were arguing for 5 mics,
right?
And Dave Mays was like,
well, if they produced on it, then obviously, then yeah.
Wow, did I give all those
all those gems? All those gems.
All those jewels?
I'm just trying to sell some copies straight from the source.
Straight from the source. You know, I still see sometimes I look, I'm like, what? People are still buying it because people will hit me and say they read.
Yeah.
It's a good thing when you write a book and it's documented.
Yeah.
But yes,
yeah.
I did say that. I did like, say that. I probably would have been a little bit more strategic nowadays. I was like, how could I say that without? Yeah. It was, everyone felt like it deserved five mics. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But you selling couldn't it to the get, bosses.
Selling it to them was always an issue because they had to, you know, they had their own agenda. And there had to be
which
some
is how Lil' Kim might have gotten five mics.
I wasn't there.
No, right.
I wasn't there when she got five mics, but it's possible.
Right.
It's possible.
See, the thing with Stillmatic is when you listen to it to this day, it still stands the test of time. You're like, that's a five mic album.
What are you saying about The Naked Truth?
I'm just saying.
What albums do you think you missed out on in terms of, like, if you looked back on it today, what did you get wrong?
Kendrick Lamar.
Okay.
When I went back, we gave him a 4.5. Everyone wanted him to get a 5-mic album.
What, did it not get 5 because Benzino didn't produce on it?
No, he wasn't there. This was after the whole Benzino thing, right? So I just was like, I can't do a 5-mic. I just was like, to me, it was so much to give away the 5 mics.
Right.
But I think because of what he stands for, and I did, I heard a lot of the younger staff and how passionate they were about what he was doing, I would have probably, and I wasn't the only one that said, I don't think it should get 5 mics. It's just in my ways of how I was brought up. And the source is like, no 5 mics. But I think looking back, I would have okayed it. And I'm not saying that just because I okayed it back then, it would have went through. It still had another step to go through.
Sure.
Right.
But I'm saying I probably would have now looking back been like, yeah, he can get 5 mics for that.
Isn't it crazy how, like, an editor-in-chief is not actually in charge of, like, all editorial decisions?
Everyone has a boss.
Right.
Everyone has a boss. So everyone always has to answer to someone. It's just the way that you mask it. And I think in a lot of magazines back then, the source owners were very, very vocal about, we run this shit.
Right.
And in other places, they weren't.
Right.
But they it's had to covert. Answer. Yeah.
Yeah. Who like, do you think Eric and I just answer to, you know, our sovereign Lord
That's right.
and Savior.
That's right. Merry Christmas, everybody.
Yeah.
Which record label do you think you had the best relationship with during your tenure at The Source? Like
Def Jam.
Absolutely. So if Elliot got a cover like last minute and it screwed you, you could always call Def Jam and you had like someone there who could get you an artist?
Pretty much. I mean, you wouldn't do it that way. I think it was more about the statements we were making with the covers and what artist at that time was great to sort of capitalize. But Def Jam had a big enough roster that there was someone there, you know, if we needed to tap into somebody.
What's the favorite cover in your tenure there?
I always change this answer when I get it.
So. Give them all.
Give them all. My favorite cover. Oh, gosh. Of The Source or when I was there?
Your whole time there.
Oh, that God. You picked, probably.
I don't know. There were so many great ones, and I'm like...
What are some of the great ones?
Oh,
you don't have to pick your favorite, but what are some of your favorite experiences, like, in terms of...
Okay. So, this wasn't even a cover that I really was excited about doing it, but the Behind Bars cover I loved because I think we did it first.
Yeah,
I think when we took everyone that were and that I believe was Benzino's idea too. I wanted to do Shine before anyone did Shine. Benzino was like, let's do everyone who's on, you know, I think it was his idea. Yeah.
All right. Well,
and
why
yeah,
not?
Hey. Yeah. And so we did and it was a great cover and it sold like crazy. Obviously, the Rockefeller cover is something that I always go to, right? We did 2 different covers to fit all of the Rockefeller artists on the cover, but it was like at the height of Jay and Dame. And it was also the 1 year anniversary of 9/11. So we had like the New York skyline in the background. It was very New York for me. I thought that was like a big statement. But I also love the Murder, Inc. cover that came right after that. And the Murder, Inc. cover, it was, I would like to say it was artistic. I like faces up close on covers because I feel like it's, you know, it's there, it's in your face. And they were a little far back, but I still, the idea of the cover and what was going on at the time, I love that cover. The biggest seller was that Jay-Z cover. I don't think anything has outsold that cover to this day. And you know, the Source history. And even probably hip-hop on the newsstand, because the Source was doing big numbers on the newsstand. It was a newsstand-driven publication. Mm-hmm. It wasn't the vibe was mostly subscription.
Yep. Right.
I can't believe I said the vibe. People in the hood say that, and I always say, why do they say the vibe? Like, anyway, vibe was like more subscription-based. So that Jay-Z cover was number one. That Murder, Inc. cover was like the second bestseller.
Who had the most creative sort of input between these three? Lior, Irv Gotti, or Dame Dash?
Creative input in the cover? Dame. Irv was very, you know, big on what he wanted as well.
Really?
So I think both of them were very strong personalities. This was at the time where they were running shit, so they could call shots. I had a great relationship with both of them, so I was able to get it done, and I think that's what helped me just as I was getting that next, because I don't think I was editor-in-chief. I think I might have been executive editor waiting for that big promotion.
Mm-hmm.
And those like took me over because I was able to. Jay hadn't done the cover. Mm-hmm. When I got him on the cover, he had not done the cover since whatever Source drama he had with Source Awards back in the day. And he had made a stark I'm not doing the Source. And I was able to get him to do the Source.
How'd you get him back?
Dame. I had a great relationship with both of them, but at the time, me and Dame were tight. And so I was like, I need this. Like, I need it.
Yeah.
I need you to put them on the cover, and they did it. So I think that both of them, as I was saying, were very, very hands-on and involved in what they were going to look like, you know, like.
I guess we should include Puff in that, too. Like, was he.
Oh, God, that's different. That's different. That's different. With, you know, there's always a sense of when you're working with a lot of power figures in hip hop, like you do have to. And I think that's sometimes for me, because I had great relationships with them, it helped. So like with a Dame or with an Irv, like we can talk about, and I'd give them what they want. I'd say, okay, you want that? All right, let's do. With Puff, it's kind of like, I remember that cover. I remember that cover we did. It was a great cover. It was like, I want this, I want that, and I want that. And it's like, okay, you know, and if you don't give it to him, he's not doing it.
Right.
So there is no real negotiation. Like, you're not in the Source. I don't think at the time when he did his cover was in a position to say like, oh, well, we won't give you this. And I think we may have tried, you know, because there are things in his like writer for the photo shoot. That,
right.
I'm like, I can't do that. Like,
would they demand their own photographers budget. Too?
Their budgets were crazy. Yeah, they would demand their own photographers. They would listen to what we had to say, like if we had suggestions, because when I was in that position, two people that I loved Jonathan Mannion and I loved Anthony Mandler.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever the photo editor said, I would get happy. You know, I'd let the photo editor live because that was her thing. But I used to be like, oh, Anthony Mandler, like exciting because his vision was, you know, he had great vision.
Yeah.
And
this is before he was doing music videos, right?
This was before. So we did a lot of that.
Yeah.
Like we put a lot of people together based on, you know, I mean, Jonathan has his own relationships. He did the covers. Yeah. He was in hip hop. But like for an Anthony Mandler, that like I don't remember him and all these hip hop artists. That was the Source saying, okay, we're gonna put you with. And you remember a lot of these. I remember there was this one photographer, who his name was Dalin, great photographer, but for hip hop it just didn't mesh. He was like, I'm going to have the little dolphin poking Trina in her belly. Remember that one?
Yeah.
When Trina was on the fuzzy little dolphin.
Yeah.
You know, it's like. We got away with it because she was half naked, but you know, when you think about the cover back then, you're like, holy crap, we did that? Like,
also, dolphins are known for sexual assault, so.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Listen.
Yeah, there should be consent in Trina riding a dolphin.
You know? So, things like that, like when I look back, I'm like, I don't know if that cover would fly now. It just so happened that.
Right.
Like, all right, she's. And the Pharrell cover we did, who shot that cover? I don't remember who shot it, but. Just didn't do well.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't do well, you know. And look, we were.
But is
we
that
had
because
the
he?
Insight. We were like Pharrell. He's gonna be big.
Right.
Yeah, let's do Pharrell. And then it was like womp.
But is that because Pharrell's too weird for like the
source
sources?
Leader. Yeah, I think so. I think so. He was too left, and at the time, people just didn't see it. They were like, mm-mm.
Yeah.
Mm-mm. We went to Brazil to shoot that cover.
Was that the beautiful shoot down there?
Yeah. Well, they did that. Mm-hmm. We went back. We went back basically like, oh my God, it's so great. We're going to go back. And so we went back to Brazil with Pharrell and we shot him on the cover with these three Brazilian women that we cast, which was like, we had to find the right women. And oh my God. And then, you know.
How long was that process?
A couple days. It was interesting. But, you know,
did you go on that?
It didn't work.
I
went.
Wow.
I went. I remember that.
That's pretty awesome.
It was.
Yeah.
It was like being in Brazil with Pharrell and, you know, and Pharrell, he's super creative. So, you know, he had these ideas. So we had to work with that. Sometimes when you're way creative, like the Pharrells and the Kanyes and they have ideas, you got to bring them
back in.
Yeah.
Like, we can't really do that. Like, you know, it's not going to work.
And right.
So there are those things, you know, but it didn't work.
Who were you ever, because these are some very big names, who were you intimidated to meet ever?
I don't think I was ever intimidated.
Except by J-Lo's mom.
Yeah, back in the day. I don't think I was ever intimidated. No.
How was it being a woman in the print magazine business?
You already know that story straight from the source.
Yeah.
Yes.
That it's tough.
Yeah.
It was tough. I think it was in the time we were in hip hop. I always say like I was at the height of my career at the time when hip hop was at its worst in terms of misogyny.
Well, how many people at the source couldn't stand that there was a woman who was about to get the top job?
I think there were a few. They would never admit it. You know, I think there were quite a few. Yeah. They wouldn't say that.
Mm-hmm.
But it showed, I think.
And for you, like, did you have to be like, did you have to have an extra sort of shield of armor going into
that? Yeah. And remember, this is a men's magazine. Like, I remember from the moment I walked in the source, it was, this is male readership. 55%. It's like, it's only like 5% away from the, it's like 55% men and 45 women. It's like, I remember those numbers because I always thought of that. I was like, okay, that's kind of even, but no, it's a men's magazine. It always had to have the male perspective. So I remember being told that I write like a guy and thinking that that was great. You know, and I have to capture that these days. I'm like, how do I write like a guy? Because now I'm just like, cause I'm so motherly. But, you know, I felt good about that. Mm-hmm. Like, I felt like it gave me, you know, an edge and a step up above other women. Like, I didn't understand that it was mentally abusive and I'm still scarred.
Yeah.
I'm still scarred.
I feel like Vanessa over at XXL gets the same shit.
Does she?
Yeah, I think so.
I saw Vanessa recently.
How is she?
I think she's okay. I didn't get to talk to her for a while. But, you know, Vanessa was an intern when I got that job at XXL. So Vanessa has been there.
It's a long time.
I've
only known her at XXL.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
She worked under Elliot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Bonsu was there too.
Yeah.
It was
yeah.
me, Elliot, Bonsu, and Vanessa. How funny is that?
That's crazy.
And then after a month, I left. I was like, deuces.
$10,000.
Yeah. I just turned it down.
What did you learn in your tenure at The Source?
Oh, I learned so much. I learned who my real friends were. I learned that you can't control everything. Sometimes you have to just kind of roll with the punches. But I also learned that you should always, always stick to your guns if you stand by what you believe in, right? And I think that that's a hard lesson to learn, you know, because you can't always, like, you're scared for your job. And I was always scared for my job. A lot of times when I made decisions, I was scared I was going to lose my job. What was I going to do next? People would ask me. Or if God, I remember, asked me once. He said, what are you going to do after this? I was like, I don't know. And I didn't know. I wasn't ready when the shock came of, you know, me filing the complaint and getting fired. And then all of the, you know, the lawsuit and everything happened. I wasn't ready for that.
And I'm sure you also defined yourself as this one position, right? And how do you?
I can't even get away from it now. We've been talking about it for, oh my God.
Right.
Like, it's hard because it was such a big part of my career. So you just have to keep going and keep, you know, I'm a writer. So I've diversified a lot of what I do. But I'm at the core of who I am. Even back then, I was a writer. Like, I wrote a lot of cover stories even when I was the editor. I wanted to write and I wanted to express myself. When I was little, we talked about how did I know what I wanted to do? I didn't know, but I was always good at writing and I was always good at telling stories. And my grandmother actually is really good at that too. And
really?
Yeah, I think I get it from her.
You're also really good at taking jackets from Macy's, apparently.
Yeah, I only did it never.
when did you have your first child?
2000.
So
in the middle of all this.
At the height of hip-hop's misogyny.
Yeah.
I got pregnant.
Yeah, you did it as a statement.
But
I was like, look, bitches.
But when did you start defining yourself as a mother at that point?
Yeah. You know, when you have a kid, your life really changes. You start to, it's not all about you. And I think when you don't have kids, you learn that at some point, but it comes later, you know. And for me, it came at that time where it was like, not about me anymore. And I had just got to the source and I had just graduated law school and I got pregnant and I had my daughter. I was about 27.
Mm-hmm.
So, which is a good age when I think about it back then. I'm like, wow, it's a great age. Yeah. I have friends 45. They're having kids. I'm like, oh, word?
Well, but science has changed a lot in the past, you know.
Yeah, but my tolerance right now, if I was to get pregnant, is, I don't know. I'm like, that's crazy. So, and kudos to them because I think it's great.
Yeah, of course. You know? Was there a big switch in terms of like what you tolerated before from like an artist or someone coming in to like argue with you?
Motherhood changes you. Motherhood makes you see things differently. Again, like you can't, it's only so much cool you could have with shit on your hands. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like every morning I walk my dog and I pick up her shit. And I'm like, this humbling.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Everybody should have a dog. Everybody should touch shit at some point in their day. Because it'll teach you. It'll learn you.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like that. You got to humble yourself. So mm-hmm. I pick up shit every day from my dog. And every day, I have some little poop in my hand. And when you, you know, have a kid, like you're cleaning the kid's shit and it's spit all over your shirt and you know, brings you back down to earth.
Yeah. Motherhood is not for the weak.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, you can't be cool and bossy and do all of that with you got some shit on your...
Do you think that Kanye has been thrown up on?
He probably needs to be. If he hasn't, he needs that. He mm-hmm. needs some time alone, let his kids shit all over him. And, you know, did you see that
it's really disheartening.
It is.
Yeah, it's really disheartening.
It really is.
It's like if it can happen to, like, someone who really championed, you know, black culture and...
It's horrible.
And...
Yeah.
Why are we stood talking about up him for like them. He's dead?
No,
I mean, because it
a
feels
part of him
like
is.
It doesn't it feel
part
like
of him is, yeah.
It just feels like the worst
yeah.
day.
Yeah, it does.
I mean, well, no, the election was the worst day. This just
the
feels
second
like
worst
a,
day?
Yeah, like yeah. a like an aftershock.
Yeah, it was bad for me too. We should have all held hands and been together.
Yeah.
Anyway,
it's all right. We have another 2 years until the world ends, so we can do that then. When Eminem went on record.
Eminem? Well, we didn't even talk about him yet.
I know. Well, I mean, like, you know, there's a lot that you go into in your book.
Yeah.
And people should read
so, like,
that.
Yeah,
from
we don't
the
have to, like, do the right. whole thing. But, like, hearing your name on a record, first of all, where were you when you first heard it?
Where was I? In my car. And I think someone called me and told me about it. And I was just like, I was amazed. And remember, Eminem of then wasn't Eminem of now.
Right.
So everyone was just like a rapper back then. And there was a point where it wasn't cool to be a rapper. Like, you know, we kind of almost felt like at the source, and I'm going to say this, like, just a rapper. You know who had that too? Remember how, going back to Dame and Jay,
mm-hmm.
remember Jay would say things in his records like he was more than a rapper.
Yeah. Right.
I'm a CEO, not a rapper.
Yeah.
It wasn't cool to be a rapper. So, like, Eminem was just a rapper. Like, I'm like, wow, he's talking junk or whatever. I didn't see how big he was. Like, to this day, when people who don't know hear that, they're like, Eminem said, I'm like, you know what I'm saying? Like, he's just a rapper.
Right.
But, you know, he's like the biggest rapper, biggest selling rapper of all time. So you don't really think about it back then like that. We were rivals in a sense.
Yeah.
You know, but I have him to thank for my family.
That is
yeah,
true.
Which is so. Then, what is your relationship with him now? Like, is that like a crazy sort of?
I think he still
of...
hates me. I listen. I have no issues with him, but I've never seen him, so I don't even know if he exists.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've never seen him.
He doesn't leave his house though.
Right.
Do you get any Christmas cards from him?
Never. I've never seen him. ever been in the same room. My friend always says, you remember you met him at that convention when he was with Proof? I'm like, I don't remember that. But again, the source meant so much to Eminem that's what it was. Like, he was attacking me, calling me a hoe or whatever he was saying.
Right.
He was attacking me.
First of all, easy rhyme.
I know. They still bust my chops about that. Like, Riggs and them, like, because it rhymes. Yeah. Whatever. Yeah, too easy. Like, you're Eminem and that's all you could do?
Yeah.
Really?
You know he's going to respond to this.
Right, hopefully in a Christmas card.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be great?
That would be great.
Really all awesome. Over the place,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, right.
See, now I'm like, come on, Eminem, say it again. No. Not a chance.
But going through that, was that, like, just an awful time? Or did you feel, like, combative and you were like, yo, fuck him?
I was definitely like, yo, fuck him. Mm-hmm. I was definitely like, yeah. I didn't feel, I kind of laughed it off. I laughed at the records he made against the Source. Like, I laughed it off, but it was definitely like, we're at war.
But you liked the Benzino diss.
That Benzino did?
No, that Eminem did about Benzino.
Yeah, but, you know, we thought it was funny.
Yeah.
You know, I can't remember, what was it again?
I don't want to be like this. I don't really want to hurt no feelings. I'm only in real when I say nobody wants to hear the grandfather rap.
You nope. really know oh, that. Man.
Yeah. Oh, it's my favorite song.
It is. Like, we'll not, drive down to go see our...
He made that record for you guys, you know.
For us. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, 100%.
But we're not the only ones who love that. Like, it's funny. Like, I'll talk to people and they'll just be like, oh, you know what the greatest, like, diss, like, of that era was? And it was like, oh, yeah, of course. Nail in the Coffin.
Or, over
you know.
Ether? Oh,
no,
my God.
I mean...
You want to know what?
Maybe.
It's definitely more enjoyable,
more replay value. Yeah,
I don't like, you know, just being like, "Fuck Jay-Z."
Yeah, like nobody would do that now. But remember back
no,
then?
No, certainly
yeah.
not now.
Yeah.
So after that whole thing went down,
uh-huh.
and after you left the Source,
mm-hmm.
how long did it take you to get out of the fog and then move on?
It was tough. I think I had to deal with the lawsuit. So the lawsuit, I left in 2005. The lawsuit happened in 2006. You know, I got pregnant and had my kid, another kid in 2007. I had one in 2009. And then I got married in 2011. So every 2 years, like, I felt
you
like.
You have a life event.
Just, right. you yeah. know, just living my life. I don't right. know. And I was at BET, which was a great place to be at the time.
Right.
Just because.
We saw you over there.
Yes.
Viacom is great, right? Like, the insurance were. Can I say lit? Is that not cool anymore?
No,
it is. Yeah, yeah. Listen.
So
yeah.
people
yeah.
still say lit. Yeah.
I, as long just, as you I'm don't learning, say on fleek, because then that's like, that's one room removed.
So it was great. So I was at BET, mm-hmm. And I learned a lot about television and working in that space, and that sort of helped me as I transitioned into doing what I do now,
right.
which is write and produce for TV.
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm.
So now you have three kids.
Three.
You live in New Jersey. You somewhere. Are somewhere in New Jersey. And and you drive a car and you and you are your world is not off that six train in Castle mm-hmm. Hill anymore. Do you mm-hmm. ever look back and think, even though it's, you know, just a mere miles, do you ever look back and think, like, I've made it so damn far?
I take it for granted a lot, and I, you know, I forget, and then I run into somebody who, you know, from my past or, you know, just from where I'm from, and they're like, wow, you've made it, and it's like a reality check. I'm like, oh, yeah, I guess so. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I have a house in Jersey. Yeah. Like, we're good. Everybody's fine. Like, I move the Elf every night. You guys know Elf on the Shelf?
Yeah, Elf yep. on the Shelf, sure.
Yeah, yeah. So, like,
we watch Shark Tank.
Yeah. So I, you know, I take it for granted. Sometimes you got to wake up every morning. You pick up the shit. You remember. You humble yourself. You're like, okay, thank you. When stuff comes your way, you're thankful.
Mm-hmm.
And so everything that's happened to me over the past year, it's been a great year for me. So mm-hmm. I'm very thankful for that.
Mm-hmm.
I've been getting a lot of projects and I'm working on my own schedule. So I don't yeah. have to go into the office every day, which is a thought. Like, sometimes I think, like, oh, shit, you better go get a job. Go get a job. But I've been maintaining. Like, I've been getting a lot of consulting work mm-hmm. and I've been doing a lot of writing for TV. I just... co-EP'd a show that's coming on WeTV. I just did a pilot. Like, I'm doing a lot of stuff.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And I love it because I'm in a creative space and I'm mm-hmm. writing. So
when you did work in an office mm-hmm. and when music would come to you, you were the one who decided, like, what everyone else
right.
would hear and what was good, what was not. Now, how much of your music in 2016, about to be 2017, comes through your kids.
You know what? I still have a great ear. Like, I give it to myself on that. And I didn't, like, I hear stuff and I can tell if it's going to, you know, make it. So, like, if my kids have that same intuition when it comes to music. Like, I've noticed that about both of my daughters. Like, they're very big into music. Mm-hmm. They put me up on stuff and we're kind of, it connects us a little bit.
Right.
So I don't want to seem like that's the only connection, because I try to take what they consume and make sure that they're very well-rounded.
Right.
They're not just listening to Young M.A.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But
I think there is something healthy about, like, not just living in a certain era, but also being, like, open to the, you know, Drums and Uzis and Yachty's and whoever else is, like, popular
and
now.
And I like a lot of it. You know, I try. Sometimes I go out there, I'm like, I can't listen to that stuff. And then I'm in the car and I'm like, you know, like, I turn up the volume and I like it.
What I only listen to Lord Tariq and Peter Guns.
No, that's fair.
I heard that it's
some subliminals. It's really good. Yeah.
What's the best unreleased record that you ever heard?
Unreleased record probably a Kanye song.
Really?
Yeah. Kanye gave me this disc way back when he was putting out his album. And a couple of years ago, I was looking for it because I was like, yo, I can get a shitload of money for that.
Then you don't need to work.
Yeah. I think I just lost it or broke it or some shit. But he gave me a CD and it was a bunch of tracks that he never put out. And it was like, so on the CD, like, he had the original version of the Lauryn Hill sample. Remember that record?
Yeah.
It was Selena Johnson.
All Falls Down.
He had the original of that. He had a lot of tracks that did not make College Dropout. And I had this CD and I used to play it because it was it was basically a College Dropout.
Yeah.
But before he decided what was going to go on the album. And I would listen to it and, like, I loved it. I was like, this is great. But a lot of those tracks did not make the album. So, and then I lost it because, of course, I didn't value shit back then. So I was like, whatever. And then a couple years ago, I'm like, where's that CD? I put that shit on eBay. No, so yeah.
Did you have any?
Wait, you 50 Cent played some unreleased stuff for you too, actually, now that I think about it.
I heard, like, I was one of the first people to hear Get Rich or Die Trying. Look at that. I can't even remember. Yeah, I was one of the first people to hear that album. And it was, you know.
Was there anything that was different on the?
Yes.
What?
Yes, there was. Don't do that. There was the Back Down record was different. I remember that. I remember when I heard it, I was like, you're going to put that out? Like, oh my God. Like, he was dissing everybody. And saying some shit. Well, you know 50 nowadays, right?
Yeah, right.
That's how you see him. He 50 has no filter. He doesn't care. He'll say whatever about whoever. So there was, you know, there was shit on there that I was like, you can't say that. Like, you know, just being in my position in the industry, I was like, you can't put that out. Like, you'll have everybody against you. And then when it came out, you know, it was directed more towards Ja and his crew.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it was everybody.
Yeah.
Did I say that? I didn't say that in the book, right?
Yeah, you did.
I did?
Yeah.
You see, shame on you.
Yeah, you see how I, like,
you
set you up?
Jokes yeah, he, on
you. He, you know what you should read? Straight from the Source.
Yeah.
I
have a copy.
I use it to lecture, though. So when I lecture, I definitely take it with me and I, like, excerpt certain things and then it makes me remember. But remember, when I wrote it, it was, like, right there. It was all in my head.
Yeah.
I put it on paper. So nowadays, people ask me stuff. I'm like, I said that?
Did they ask you to do an audio version of it?
No.
Oh, maybe they should have.
Is it too late? I should do that.
I know.
What are you doing after this?
I know. Karaoke.
Yeah, we're doing karaoke and then we're going to do that.
In your voice, imagine. Like,
yeah.
I'm Kim and I'm from the Bronx and blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I could do a pretty good
funny.
Kim.
That'd be funny.
But overall, everything's good.
Everything is good.
You ready for Christmas?
I am.
You did all your shopping?
No. I didn't even start. I'm glad you guys didn't ask me about Love and Hip Hop. The last podcast I did, I got all these Love and Hip Hop questions.
Oh, well, we don't watch Love and Hip Hop.
No. I mean, what are we going to... Peter Guns?
Yeah. We did talk about it.
No, because, you know, I write the reunion shows. So I've been doing that for a while now. I didn't realize it's been like...
Well, how do you write a reunion show?
Well, you write the copy for the host.
For the host, yeah.
And you write the copy... the questions and you help shape the conversation and how the show is gonna go. So it's
so
you
when
know,
somebody slaps somebody else, you say, you I am like
write.
God. I made this happen.
I like
you don't make it happen, but you definitely you you write things in a way that you know is going to help incite drama and not fists.
Right.
We would never condone that.
Joe takes on consequence.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't do that. I don't think I did that one.
Oh, okay. Well,
good. I did.
You want to know what? You should put it in the next one.
I did, like, I've done like eight now.
Are you ready for this season?
So this one will be in production. I don't know if I'm supposed to say.
All right.
I don't know.
At some point.
We'll be in production very soon. And so we'll start, you know, because the show, I believe, is airing now.
Yes.
They may have just finished taping the last episode or so. So now it's like reunion mode.
Who's on the season? Juelz is on the season and Cardi, right? And Drewski.
Yep.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah. Drewski as White Chocolate.
White Chocolate.
Yeah.
White Chocolate Drewski.
I gotta watch the season. I usually do it in like, and that's how I consume most of my stuff, not like Netflix, right? Mm-hmm. Like you just watch everything at once. I just watch it all at once.
Yeah, so, and you throw up.
I gotta catch it.
Well, we so appreciate you coming through.
Of
course. We're gonna see you tomorrow. So.
Oh, we go to karaoke?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, tomorrow. Right, we're hanging out tomorrow.
Can't we so appreciate you coming through?
Thank you guys.
Thanks everyone for listening to this episode of A Waste of Time with It's the Real, part of the 12 Days of Podcasts, 12 new podcasts in 12 days leading up to Christmas. Not bad so far, Jeff.
Not bad. We are actually possibly going to make it through this.
I think, look, let's you know, count all of our chickens once they've hatched, but we're in the egg phase right now. If people don't know where they can find us, and hopefully at this point they do, but if they don't, where can you direct them, Jeff?
You can always go to soundcloud.com/awasteoftime. You can also go to iTunes, search for A Waste of Time with It's the Real. We're also on Google Play and Stitcher and, you know, whatever people listen to podcasts on.
Sure.
You can also go to Instagram at It's the Real, Twitter at It's the Real, Facebook at It's the Real, Snapchat gets confusing.
Yep.
It's the Real, and It's the Real Eric, It's the Real was taken. So don't follow It's the Real unless you're going to bombard them with please to give us our name.
Do we know anybody over at Snapchat that can help us get at It's the Real?
I don't know.
Well, if you're out there, hit us up, let us know. Here's the thing, Jeff.
Yes.
This podcast needs to grow. We need to get it into the heads and minds of everybody out there, and it all starts with us telling our friends to let their friends know. Who would you like to shout out today?
I want to shout out the good people at Licks and Stains, the clothing company. Shouts to at PBBT. Always great to connect with him, and also always great to receive clothes from him. Those clothes are awesome.
That was so great.
You see everybody wearing them around New York.
And,
so.
And you know what? I got a lot of compliments when I wore it out and DJed a night at the Auxbury at Kim Coke the other night. Shout out to them.
Yeah.
I, Jeff,
yes,
would like to finally shout out. You know, I didn't know that it was a thing. I didn't know that we had, you know,
people dying to get shouted out.
I need to shout out DJ G-Mix. He is G_MIX7 on SoundCloud. And he said, where's my shout out? Well,
here it is.
There it is. Shout out. Shout out one time to DJ G-Mix. But here's the thing, DJ. Yeah. Spread the word. Let people know about A Waste of Time with It's the Real. Jeff, we have, let's see, let's do the math. We've done four already. Do we have eight more podcasts on the way? You want to know what? In a row?
It's a strong possibility, but
well, we definitely, you never know. We have one coming tomorrow.
I know that we're recording three today.
Okay. Well, we have one coming tomorrow. I hope people listen to that. It's a really fun one. Hopefully you enjoyed today's. And know this, people. You're really going to enjoy our live show at SOB's February 23rd. Tickets are on sale right now. Go to itsthereal.com and get them. Jeff.
Yes. Tomorrow. Okay.